Cryptids and MILFs. I'm your host, Amanda.
And I'm Ella. And you're entering the sovereign country of Scully Nation, where the flashlights are flickery and the blazers are boxy.
So this is an X-Files rewatch podcast, and I am watching the X-Files for the first time.
And I'm watching it for the third or fourth time. I've seen it all. I've been to the clearing at the end of the path, and now I'm coming back.
And I don't know anything. I don't even know what an alien is.
Oh, we haven't seen any yet. Not that, I mean, we might not ever. Who knows? Anyway, so today we're discussing season one, episode three, Squeeze.
They're just, you know, they're taking those episode titles and are they just making them worse every time? Deep Throat, Squeeze.
I think this is better than Deep Throat.
It is, objectively, yeah. But when you put them side by side, it creates a pattern.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything as horrible coming up.
Okay.
I think we get a reprieve for a while.
Okay.
But yes.
Sounds good.
So this is our very first Monster of the Week episode. Very exciting. Kind of our first episode to branch out into horror. I guess before this we were more sci-fi. So this is kind of the proving that the show could go long term, because they can't sustain just a show on the alien subplots for 9 seasons. So.
But they can have spooky little guys with little yellow eyes creeping out of corners.
They can.
Every week.
I don't think they could do that every single week.
Well, but, that wouldn't be very good.
Related plots.
Other monsters.
Other monsters with other eye colors.
Yeah. You got red, you got blue.
Sure.
You got green, but those last two were just normal.
Those are just normal eye colors.
Well, listen.
This episode is also notable because the villain, I guess, the monster of the episode, Tombs, is on a lot of lists for, like, best TV serial killers, best TV monsters, stuff like that. So this is an episode that's made an impact on pop culture.
This is probably a question you can't answer, but does he come back?
Do you want me to answer that question?
No, I guess not. I feel like I can guess based on the fact that it's made an impression, but maybe not.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
It was strongly implied at the end, so I wouldn't be surprised.
He was making creepy faces at the door.
He was gazing.
He may.
Okay,
come back.
I suspected.
Also, if you look at the episode titles for the season one, you can figure it out.
Episode 7: Tombs Returns. Oh, okay.
Pretty much.
Well, okay.
Anyway. But, I don't know. It's not a huge spoiler.
Now I know everything about this dang show.
Another thing notable about this episode is this is kind of the first episode where we get more of an outside view of what other people in the Bureau think about Scully and Mulder's work. Because before this, it was just kind of, I mean, we could guess, but it was pretty much just Mulder and Scully and we were just running around with those crazy kids, but now we kind of...
What I would categorize as bullying in this episode.
There sure was.
Which I found troubling.
Yeah.
But yes, I have more thoughts and notes when we get into the plot summary.
We'll get into the meat.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a general background. So, the air date was September 24th, 1993. This episode is written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong and directed by Harry Longstreet. Glenn Morgan and James Wong are heavyweights of the series. They've written a whole lot of episodes for the show, so they're big boys. And Harry Longstreet is not a heavyweight of the show. He was actually replaced halfway through the episode for reasons that I'll get to when we get to the kind of the behind the scenes. But they did kind of replace him halfway through.
Yikes!
So he directed most of the episode, but then they had a second guy, Michael Cattleman. Cattleman. Don't know how to say this name.
Cattleman.
Yep. Something like that. Anyway, he directed some additional footage with the direction of James Wong. So the production of this episode was problematic.
Oh, interesting.
So.
Just like the meaty subjects that we'll get into when we talk about the characters.
Ooh.
The morality.
All right.
I don't know.
Something like that. This episode also takes place in Baltimore, Maryland, and Washington, D.C.
Basically the same place. Not really, but they're close.
Oh, they're close. But they can go back and forth.
You know, just hop on that train, probably.
Yeah. Probably.
Probably.
I don't know.
Or a bus.
I was in Washington, D.C. once.
Were you close to Baltimore when you were there?
I could not tell you. I don't know.
One time I was in Baltimore. Well.
The airport.
Briefly. I stood outside the airport, and then my friend picked me up in a car, and then we drove away. But I was standing there for a while.
I mean, that's more than me. So. Yeah. But less than Mulder and Scully.
Presumably.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Also, in terms of locations, this is kind of the first time that we see Scully's apartment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically we saw her in her bed in, like, the first episode. But
this is the first time we get to see the set.
Yes.
And I have thoughts on it that we can get into later.
All right. So, a general plot synopsis of this episode. Mulder and Scully investigate a series of murders where there appears to be no tangible method for the murderer's entrance and escape. Eugene Victor Toombs, a seemingly normal janitor, is suspected by Mulder to be a mutant who kills his victims and extracts their livers in order to prolong his existence. And you know he's bad news because he has three names.
That is never a good sign. You know he's going to be a serial killer. It's classic.
Sure. Although, recently, this seems like a very obvious thing, but I recently discovered the reason why serial killers have three names is just because the media calls them by their full name so that other people that have their first and last name won't get pulled into it.
That makes sense.
Which seems pretty obvious, but I did not really put that together.
You know, you got your John Waynes and your John Wayne Gacy's, and exactly. Never the twain shall meet.
Yep.
I guess that's not quite the same, but you know, you don't want those innocent Eugene Toombs out there getting caught up in the whirlwind. Those
innocent Eugene Toombs.
Up in the...
It's a very common name.
I know. I went to high school with, like, six different Eugene Toombs.
Oh, okay.
It was weird.
Interesting.
I don't know why.
Well, shall we get into the meat of the episode?
Let's talk about this dang episode. I'm ready. We open on a street in Baltimore at dusk, we think.
Or dawn.
Yes, we had a discussion about whether it was dusk or dawn, because there's a businessman walking into an office building that's pretty much closed. And so it could be really early in the morning or really late at night. But he gets on the phone and he says that it's 8:30 and the presentation didn't go well.
Yes.
So I'm assuming if it was 8:30 in the morning, there'd be people in the office. So
okay.
I think it's probably
all right.
But
okay.
It was ambiguous to me.
Fist fight canceled.
I guess we don't have to fight about this physically.
Okay.
But we can
fight emotionally.
We have cutting emotional. Okay. We could just, like, cut each other down this whole episode.
Well, that doesn't sound very fun.
No.
Okay. So business boy walking into a building, and then we see what we can only assume is Pennywise in the sewer. Mm-hmm. A creepy little man with creepy little yellow eyes.
Just scoping out from inside the depths of the sewer drain.
You can tell just from his face that he has three names. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You can tell.
He's got a real three-name face. Sure. To him.
You know the type.
I would say that most people who are in a sewer drain probably have three names, unless they're like a municipal worker, which I guess he says he is.
Come
or whatever.
On.
I guess he is literally a municipal worker.
He is. He's so doing his job.
He's animal control or sure. Whatever.
Something. All right. So businessman goes in the building. We see a creepy little dude in the sewer. Our poor business boy is loading up his coffee for the long, long night. What happens?
He does get murdered.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see it. And apparently this is kind of a shoddily made office because his door just gets smashed in.
Yeah, it really does.
It looks like a cheap apartment
plyboard
door.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So his door gets smashed in. We see, I'm not sure if it was blood or coffee or both dripping onto the carpet. Probably both.
Yeah, it was very thick, but then it was coming from the coffee cup. So I'm not entirely sure what was going on there.
Maybe he was drinking a nice thick hot chocolate.
It's possible.
To make himself feel better after his bad, bad presentation when he shamed his family.
Maybe. And I did kind of like the shot. After he gets killed, we don't actually see his body directly. They just kind of pan and we see the reflection of his body and then a lot of blood all over his supplies. So That was kind of fun.
Yes, I had made note of that too. I didn't want to repeat myself because it was just the last episode that I got excited about a shot that had reflections in it, but sure. I did enjoy that directing choice too. Now that I know there was drama with the directors behind the scenes, mm-hmm. I want to know who was responsible for that shot.
I don't know. That's don't know about thing. That one. All right, so that's our cold open, mm-hmm. smash cut again, theme song, and then what next?
We cut to Washington, D.C. We're in a silly little cafe. It's fine.
It was a very ugly cafe.
It was doing its thing. It was the kind of place that people who work at the FBI go to have lunch with their colleagues.
I guess. Really ugly pink tablecloths.
Wow. I was thinking about getting some of those for our house.
No thanks.
Rude.
No thank you.
Scully is having lunch with an old classmate from the academy. Mm-hmm. He looks like a little nerd. He's got slicked back hair.
Yep.
He's like wearing a little suit because he's a little business boy yes. or whatever. The little FBI, bureau, whatever he's
very, very excited about his career.
Good lord.
We should also mention his name is Tom Colton.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I just call him the boy in the notes. But I guess he does have a name. Technically.
Yeah.
They chat about some other classmate that they had who was, mm-hmm. I guess, kind of a dumbass, but is already in a supervisory role because yep. I think, what's his name, Tom, says yep. he got lucky with the World Trade Center bombing, which, I guess gives you an idea of what Tom is like.
Sure.
And I don't know, he's just very entitled. He's very grumpy that mm-hmm. other people are successful and he's not. I'm like, maybe you should look inward and start a podcast and find something else fulfilling in your life.
Sure.
But whatever.
But he's very invested in his career, and they're chatting about their careers, and it's kind of clear that he's like, why are you working in this dumb little unit? You're mm-hmm. not going to go anywhere with this. It's dumb. It's too spooky.
He's condescending he about sure is. Aliens.
Also, this probably isn't actually a weird thing, but he did aggressively call her Dana all the time, which I guess is not weird, because that's her name.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
I don't know.
Because that is what you would call other people.
I know it's not actually weird. It just felt weird.
What a creep. You know what? He's canceled. Tongue is canceled. Fucking creep. He called Scully by her first name as if he had a right.
That's what I... Thank you.
He had a right.
Thank you.
Hey, they probably partied together. They probably
did.
Chugged jungle juice out of a bathtub. Okay. Know how you do it?
Yeah,
at the academy.
I'm saying I know it's not actually a weird thing. It just it felt very aggressive.
That's fair.
I didn't care. Maybe I just didn't care for him.
That's fair. I don't care for him either. He's hating on Mulder. He's calling him spooky Mulder. Scully's defending Mulder.
Yes.
Which was pretty dang cute.
Yes.
But it's pretty rich that this guy is whining about it, because then next sentence he's like, I've got a spooky case that I need help with. Whatever.
So, whatever. Tom.
Tom. So he's explaining the locked room mystery serial mm-hmm. killer who eats livers with his bare hands.
And there's been other cases, and the new detail that we didn't have before is that all the people's livers were missing.
Gross.
Which, do you have anything that you'd like to say about livers before we move on?
I'm just not a fan of thinking about livers, mm-hmm. because they're so big.
Yes.
They're just a really big organ, uh-huh. and they're sure. inside of you.
Yep.
And it's just kind of a slippery slope to thinking about all the other organs that are just mm-hmm. encased yeah. in our meat sacks.
Uh-huh.
And then I just think about the Invader Zim episode where they have too many organs shoved into their bodies. And it's just gross.
It's pretty gross.
I don't want to think about my liver. I don't want to think about anyone's liver. They're so big. And you can just, like, cut them in half and then put them in someone else and it, like, grows back.
Ew.
What's up with that?
Well.
I don't even know if that's true. Is that actually how they work?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. It's horrible.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like that this episode forced me to think about it. But I will say it is an effective horror tool, because just saying the word liver freaks me out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'll drop some knowledge on you. Glenn Morgan, the writer of the episode, said that they did choose liver because it was funnier than any other organ. So.
There's nothing funny about my trauma. This is serious.
Glenn Morgan thinks it's funny, so you're going to have to take it up with him.
That's fair. It's also probably the organ that feels the most edible, right? I mean,
yeah,
that makes sense. If you were going to eat someone, I guess.
Or kidneys. Kidneys feel edible.
That's true. Yeah. If you were going to eat someone, you'd eat the liver or the kidneys, right?
I think so.
Probably.
I mean, probably.
People eat liver.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Okay. Apparently, no, people don't usually eat human liver, to be clear. Well,
but if you had to.
I'm just saying.
If you had three names.
I'm saying if I had three names, I would start with the liver before I got to the lungs, you know?
All right. So he tells her all about it, and even though he was disparaging Mulder and their work, he still needs their help. And he tells her, you know, if this case goes well, quote, maybe you won't have to be Mrs. Spooky anymore. And me and Amanda both in unison said, well, maybe she wants to be
exactly.
Mrs. Spooky.
Who doesn't want to be Mrs. Spooky?
Clearly Scully does.
David Duchovny, why won't you love me? Come on.
Gosh. Come on. Come on.
It is interesting that he put Mrs. right in there, you know, putting that on them. They're married. Come on.
Everyone knows it.
Tom sucks, though.
Tom does suck. All right, so we go to the next scene. They're investigating the office of the guy that we saw killed in the cold open.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say Mulder was wearing just one skin tone glove for some reason.
That was bad enough, but then... and
like a real creep.
Subsequent, I feel like it was justified, but he does shake hands with Tom... when he meets him for the first time with the creepy gloved hand.
Yeah.
Which I feel like if you were wearing gloves, wouldn't you be wearing them and not touching other people?
You'd think that's the point of a glove.
But I will say Tom deserves that.
Sure.
So yeah, he's just wearing one creepy little glove.
Yep.
And then Tom makes like a condescending joke about aliens.
Little green men.
Like, he's just like a real dick. I don't know.
He's not crazy.
He's just like rude. And then Mulder just messes with him, which would be very easy to do.
Yes.
And very tempting.
Yes.
And he's like, actually, they're gray.
Mm-hmm. And talks about the Reticulan galaxy. Yep. You can tell that he's very used to comments like this.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's got his deadpan approach to dealing with bullies.
Sure.
He's not gonna say don't stop bullying me, but he's gonna make them stop bullying him.
Yeah. With just being incredibly weird until they get weirded out and they leave.
That's actually the best way to deal with
that's
bullying.
Kind of his style.
Yeah.
So.
To be fair, I guess disclaimer, that probably works better if you are a 6'2" white man or whatever.
Yeah.
But just out weird your bullies.
Yeah.
And then Mulder goes and is like, he's investigating.
In a very, not in a Mulder way, in a very normal way. Yeah. He's looking at the desk, he's checking, like, debris on the ground, he's looking around, like anyone would do.
Like a detective.
Yes.
And Tom just goes, what the hell is he doing? To Scully, as if...
It was a very weird, aggressive reaction.
I would say that there is some... penis measuring. I don't want to use the D word.
Okay.
Going on only one of their parts.
Yeah.
It's only Tom. Mulder does not care.
Yeah, Tom has something weird. He feels some feelings for Mulder that I don't think are returned.
No. He's got some passion for our leading man.
Yes.
But anyway, so that's weird. And then there's a weird long fingerprint on the vent. Right up there.
Yep. And then now Mulder comes up with his weird theory, and he mentions that this same kind of long fingerprint was found in these old murders from Powhatan Mill, which I looked it up. It's not a real place.
No, I'm disappointed.
I looked up Powhatan Mill, and it just came up with the X-Files.
That makes sense.
And so there were 5 murders in the 1960s and the 1930s, and then also a similar case in 1903, but they didn't have fingerprinting back then. But it seems like very similar murders are happening every 30 years, 5, in groups of 5.
Hmm.
Mm.
Hmm. Suspicious.
Sure is. So they decided to do a stakeout, a stakeout in what looked to me like a Target parking lot.
It's like a parking garage that just has these big circles taken out of some of the walls, which mm-hmm. I guess is cool and opens the space up, but it does look like Target branding.
Yes.
Again, we're from Minnesota.
Yes. And Scully's sitting around. She hears a weird noise, and she gets her gun out and almost shoots Mulder, but he's just munching.
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
On those sunflower seeds.
Yeah. I do like the fact that he apparently creeped up on her stakeout literally just to tell her that she's wasting her time instead of, like, calling. Yeah.
He doesn't have anything better to do, so he's like, I can go see what Scully's up to.
I mean, I get that. How did he even know where she was? I mean, I guess they talk, but...
Yeah.
He just, like, I don't know. I like the fact that he had literally nothing else to do there. But he's like, she's freaking out and doing a stakeout of what she thinks is a serial killer. Yeah. I'm gonna go sneak up on her and just tell her that she's dumb and leave.
Yeah.
So.
Look, I respect the, I don't know, the impulse.
I get it. I get it. I was going to say he doesn't have a cell phone, but he does, because we see him on it later.
He's
driving, so. Yeah. But anyway, so he, you know, she's getting back in her car, but then Mulder hears something in the vents, cling, cling, clanging.
Uh-oh.
Oh my god, tells her to call for backup, and, you know, they run over to the vent, she's got her gun out, and then clang, 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 down the vent, out comes a little creepy weirdo, but normal fingers.
What?
I know. Doesn't make any sense. Anyway, a bunch of guys arrest him.
Yep. Take him back to the bureau. Mm-hmm. Take him through a lie detector test. Most of the questions are pretty normal, what you'd expect, except there's some silly questions in there about being over 100 years old.
What is that? Goofy.
Oh, boy.
Oh my gosh, how he looks like a young boy.
He sure does. In his
20s or 30s.
Impossible.
But? Maybe.
So
then all of the other FBI agents get really mad at Mulder for daring to ask those questions. It's like, are you 100 years old? Were you at, what's it, Powhatan Mill. In the 1930s? Blah, blah, blah. Mr. Squeeze passes the test. That's what I call him in my notes. they come and say that the reason he was in the vents was to get a dead animal out of them. Which
at 11 at night.
That's not... Also, is that how you would do it? Just, like,
crawling around?
Well,
if you're Mr. Squeeze.
I mean, I did, like, what was the quote from one of the guys? It was, oh, no. It was like, he's the only civil servant with initiative, and we busted him for it. And I was like, well, how do you define initiative?
What is this?
The only definition of initiative is crawling around in vents at 11 p.m.
I guess.
I suppose.
But they don't think it's the guy. They're like, all right, whatever. He was just there. We're going to let him go, even though Mulder thinks something is afoot. And then they were not only incredibly rude to Mulder, but they were also incredibly rude to the woman administering the lie detector test. And she was like, well, my interpretation of these questions is like, I don't need to hear that.
Like,
what is wrong with you?
Other, like, FBI boys are real.
I don't care for them.
Club of dicks.
Yeah.
FBI dicks. I don't know.
Don't like it.
That was really wild. He's just like, I don't need your input. And I was like, didn't you bring in an expert professional to explain her input?
Yeah.
Specifically, not that obviously polygraphs are kind of bullshit, but
in
the context of the show, they're being treated as real, and then he's just dismissing the expert in the room. Whatever. Wait, is he the one? I guess we'll get to it, but is he the one who gets murdered? Like,
who?
Isn't one of the murder victims, like, one of the FBI boys?
No.
Oh.
It's just an unrelated.
Well,
dude,
this is my face blindness coming back.
At least I think. Unless I really missed it.
No.
I think it was just
some dude.
They
probably would have made that a much bigger plot point, huh?
Yeah. They didn't make any
comments
about it. So.
No, you're right. I can't tell. This is going to be, I guess, important, so we should probably address it on the podcast.
Of course.
I do have a lot of difficulty recognizing human beings, so.
She does. This is a real documented problem.
Phenomenon.
Yeah.
So I really thought that it was, like, the big boss FBI boy.
Oh.
And I was kind of glad when he died. So now I feel bad that I was glad that he died.
I think it was just a dude.
It was just a random dude.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so post-polygraph test, going back to that scene, after they're walking out, Mulder and Scully are walking away, and she's got on this long necklace.
Sure.
And at one point, Mulder grabs it to make, like, while he's making an emphatic point to her, which seemed... like, just a horrible and very strange thing to do as a human being.
Yeah.
But it became clear later on that it was an intentional drawing focus to the fact that she was wearing a necklace.
I will say it was a little less... It was very weird the first time, because it was just like... It was a little less weird the second time, because it was stuck.
Oh.
Like, the necklace was, like, stuck in her jacket, so okay. It was, like... So he was fixing it.
Gotcha. Okay, I missed that. I thought he was just trying to, like, grab her.
No, it was all crooked and, like, stuck in her jacket, oh, okay. So he was, like, fixing it.
Okay, well, that's kind of cute.
Yeah. So, it was a little less weird the second time around.
It's a very intimate gesture, I guess,
it for sure was.
Coworkers.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe that'll come up later.
Yeah.
In certain segments that we have.
Sure. But it seemed very strange, because she already has a character-defining necklace.
Yeah.
So what is this silly necklace?
Plot.
We don't care about this.
It's a plot point.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He also, so they're kind of discussing, it seems like Scully is, Mulder's used to it, used to being made fun of, like we mentioned, but Scully isn't, and she's like, she seems a little weirded out by it, like, why aren't you more upset about this? And he's like, you know, whatever, I'm used to it. And he does tell her, you know, if you want to keep working with them, I won't hold it against you. So he kind of gives her an out, but she ain't getting out.
But I want She's you to hold it. Me against you, is what she says.
that's verbatim.
Yeah, that and I was exactly like, ooh, wow, says. that's a lot. That's mm-hmm. more than I was expecting.
Yeah. So this is kind of sort of the first episode where Scully's... She sort of has to choose a side. Like, it's not that dramatic in this episode, but to a certain extent, she kind of has to pick a side, and she's on Mulder's side.
So she goes with the man who isn't bullying his coworkers instead yes. of the ones who say the word spooky and then giggle maniacally mm-hmm. repeatedly in the episode.
I don't understand it.
I mean, it's pretty funny. Spooky. Whatever. Anyway. Anyway, so they go and look at the long, crazy fingerprints in a computer yep. system that I really enjoyed.
Some cool
this was,
technology.
You know, peak 90s.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss, because they do just have, like, a JPEG of the elongated one, and then, like, zooms into screen a normal one that they got yep. from Eugene Toombs, and then just, like, elongates, like, someone is messing with it in MS yep. Paint, and then... put those two together, it's a match, and then 100% match, and then Eugene Toombs' picture slides into the screen.
It's pretty cool.
Which I enjoyed the UI of that very much.
Pretty cool.
Technology.
Mm. Alright, then we cut again, and it's time for another murder. So we go to an unrelated man who's not an FBI agent.
I wrote, it's old FBI man in my notes.
It's not.
I was so confident. And then I wrote, Dude drives a Beamer.
Am I wrong?
I don't think so. No, I think you're right, because they literally didn't even mention that, and they would have talked about that if their boss got murdered. That would have come up.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a dude. I'm pretty sure it's just a dude.
I don't know how I'm supposed to identify the difference between one man and another.
I know, it's tough.
Good lord. This time I only watched the episode the second time on, like, 1.4 speed.
Oh.
Instead of 2.5 okay. speed. So I had time.
All right.
So I don't know what my excuse is.
So we've got some dude coming back home in the middle of the night, and then, it's Mr. Squeeze.
It's Evil Santa.
Evil Santa back again. So he climbs up the wall with his bare fingers, but he did not take his shoes off.
Weird.
It feels like he should, to get his little toes in there.
Little gripper toes.
Little gripper toes.
Yeah, he's, like, climbing in between the bricks on the outside mm-hmm. of random man's house.
Yes. Then he, as we said, turns into Evil Santa, and then this is kind of the first time that we see his actual powers, so he can kind of break his bones and elongate himself and stretch, so he kind of just, like, wiggles down the chimney, just like Santa.
I think that's how Santa does it, and no. I don't care for it.
No.
Oh, and also, this is an important thing. The guy has a deeply ugly door in his house. Did you notice this?
Yes.
What is wrong with
that? It's very ugly.
I don't even know if I just blocked it out when we watched it the first time.
I thought I pointed it out while we were watching it. Probably did,
and I just blocked it out.
It's super ugly.
And then I noticed it this time, and I couldn't think of anything else.
It's like clouded glass with like three black and white checkered squares in a
jail
pattern.
I don't know.
It's very ugly.
And it's got like studs on it too.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's and it opens weird and it's just in the middle of a normal house.
Yeah.
It's
not great. Yeah, this
did not care for it.
This guy's decor is very strange. So he goes to this evil door and he comes into his other room, which I would describe it looks like a room that Catherine O'Hara in Beetlejuice would have decorated. Mm-hmm. It looks exactly like that. Lots of red, chunky things everywhere. Just some katanas on the mantelpiece, I guess.
Actually, this guy might be the most interesting character in this show. I kind of wish we had gotten to know him.
I'm kind of into this guy.
It's weird.
So he goes into his special little Beetlejuice room, but uh-oh, Mr. Squeeze is there.
Shoot.
Eats him. Or eats his liver.
Eats part of him.
Yeah.
You hate to see it. We cut to morning.
Wait. I have an important question about this scene.
Okay.
He goes to the murder victim, goes to the chimney, and he's lighting the fire, and the fire goes out, which led me to believe that Toombs was in the chimney blocking it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's already in the room.
Yeah.
So what was the significance of just the fire going out?
Probably just a metaphor for his life being snuffed out.
Actually, maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Also, maybe he's just bad at lighting fires.
I guess it's not that important.
He also just apparently leaves kindling in his fireplace at all times.
Yeah,
put newspaper in there. He just apparently has left it in there.
I didn't believe that this guy... Well, I was going to say, I don't believe that this guy is prepared enough to, like, have a fire ready to go. But he did have this very deeply ugly Beetlejuice room, so...
I'm telling you, this might be the most interesting man in the world. I want to know what his life is. He, like, lives alone in a weird house.
Where's our spinoff about this guy?
Where's our spinoff about Mr. Victim?
Mr. Victim.
Sure. I just want to come home to my weird, weird abode.
Yeah.
Loosen up my tie.
I guess.
Get a little brandy. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Go make a fire. Get my liver eaten.
All right.
And I think that's my right.
I love this guy.
Yeah.
All right.
He's my favorite character.
Okay.
And so, I stand by it.
We cut, we break, next morning.
Same house. Now, a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
Scully's old classmate, who I just wrote that as his name in my notes because I don't want to dignify him.
Tom.
Tom. Mr. Colton. Mr. Slicked Back Hair is freaking out, and he's like, at this point, I'll give any theory a shot, and then... comedic timing, Mulder walks right in at the exact moment, and he's not interested in giving Mulder's theories a shot, as it turns out.
Typical Tom.
And he's, you know, freaking out on Dana. He's like, whose side are you on, me or Mulder?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm on the victim's side because I'm not an idiot.
No.
Good Lord, I hate Tom. Whatever.
So they kind of put the pieces together and they go back to their, I don't know where they were, some investigation cubicle.
Investigation chamber?
Sure. And they do their little investigation montage. They're looking at microfiche. There's some montage acting going on.
I liked this because it reminded me of like an Edgar Wright montage and like Hot Fuzz where it's just paperwork.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a very dramatic like action montage, but it's just like microfiche going across and like Mulder taking off and putting on glasses.
Yep.
I don't know. I had a good time with it.
Yeah.
They're doing research.
They are. They're doing history research and kind of solidifying the every 30 years thing. And then they do note that if they don't catch Toombs now, the next chance they're going to get is in 2023. So it's almost time.
You guys want to have a party?
Back.
We could all eat liver.
In 3 years. Or 2 years.
Only two.
2 years.
Mm.
And I did like this line. They mentioned that he's coming back in 2023. And then Mulder did say, and, you know, of course, Scully will be the head of the Bureau by then.
Yeah. Hard eyes. God, I wrote a little smiley face in my notes for that.
Yeah.
They just support each other.
Anyway. Not like Tom.
Not like Tom, who's just trying to drag everyone down to his shitty little level.
His greased back hair level.
Ugh. Hate him. Whatever. It's fine. I'm over it. He's fine. I'm just saying if I had to choose him or Toombs, I would choose Toombs.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So then they go to visit a, I guess he used to be a sheriff. Now he's just an old man in a wheelchair.
It's true.
But he was the investigator when? In the 60s?
No, it was the 30s, which I thought was wild. I was trying to do the math because I thought I had just misheard. He was like, yeah, I was doing the investigation in the 30s. And I was like, how is that possible? But then later he talks about how he was like on desk duty for the ones in the 60s. And like they'd already taken
him
away. How old
is this guy?
I know. I mean, I guess this was the 90s. So, I mean, if he's in his 80s. But
it feels like a very long time.
It did seem wild to me. But no, okay. He was there for the 30s investigation. And he has practiced a monologue. And he is ready for someone to come ask him about this situation.
Yep.
He's got all sorts of stuff to say. He's connecting it to, like, Nazi Germany.
Yeah, it was like a whole thing.
I don't know,
it was
all there. It was like the evil that man does has caused this abomination on Earth.
It felt like a little overblown for
quite
a serial killer. I was like, okay, dude.
Also, he had a whole thing about how he, you know, had seen a lot of murders and he could always go home and kind of keep work at work and keep home at home, and mm-hmm. he wasn't traumatized by other stuff, but this was the thing that he couldn't forget. And I was
it's like it's not that crazy.
I guess it sucks, but
it's bad, but
you know, it's eating livers, it's not that bad.
Like, get over
it. Watch Hannibal,
come on.
Good lord.
Anyway, and he also has a picture of Toombs from the 30s. I thought it was from the 60s, but it's from the 30s?
No, I think that one is from the 60s, because then he said he was on the investigation in the 30s. Then by the time it was the 60s, people were like, you're crazy, you can't be investigating this. But he was like, it's gotta be the same guy. So he was doing his own surveillance.
Okay.
And he had, like, boxes of his own little secrets.
Right. Okay. But he does have a picture of Toombs from the 60s, I guess, and he looks exactly the same.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, what is this, his dad?
Grandpa?
His grandpa?
Maybe.
I don't know.
He's also got a picture of the apartment that Toombs, I guess, is living in, or said he lived in, or in the past, the suspect in these other murders, who totally isn't Toombs, said he lived in, or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I liked it because it felt like a BoJack Horseman joke, because it's like a picture of the apartment with a giant billboard that says, get the new 1963 model of this car. Which, you know, we're in the 60s.
That's fun.
I liked it.
Yeah.
So Mulder and Scully go to that apartment, which has now been abandoned.
It's pretty gross.
Condemned.
Don't like it. They go up to his apartment, or what was his apartment, and they open the door, and it's the shot from the credit sequence.
Mm-hmm. I think flashlights.
I think that's the only, like, because the rest of the credit sequence is just, like, random images, right? I think that's the only shot from the actual show.
I think so.
Yeah.
Unless we get a screaming man.
I don't know. But yeah, it's the one, you know it. They open the door, they got their guns, their flashlights.
Those are iconic. Some FBI agents ready to do some investigating.
So this will help you on your trivia night. If they ask you what episode that scene is from, it's from season 1, episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Got it. It's locked in my brain.
Yep.
So it's, you know, it's a spooky apartment, but it's empty. Another loose end, not loose end, dead end. Another dead end.
Yep.
And then there's a mattress propped against the wall, not unlike the mattress in our recording studio right now.
We are looking right at a mattress.
And we have not checked behind it. So
I have not looked behind it in quite a while.
A little worried, frankly, because in the show, Mulder knocks the mattress to the floor and there's a little hole going down to a little, I think they call it a coal cellar.
Yep.
And they, you know, Mulder and Scully descend into hell, into the underworld, the hero's journey.
That's what that old sheriff would have said about it.
Exactly.
He was here.
I mean, he had time to, he was also a novelist.
Yeah,
and he was ready. So they, you know, go down to the cellar. There's a creepy little nest made of rags and newspaper.
And bile, and it's really gross.
And Mulder touches it.
He touches it!
He touches it before he realizes it's bile, but still.
Still, why are you touching it?
Yeah, he's got gloves on to go look at a vent in a clean crime scene, and he doesn't put gloves on to go touch bile newspaper.
Disgusting.
Mulder.
But then this is my favorite line of the episode is he touches it, and then Scully's like, I think that's bile. And he says, well, is there any way that I can get this off my fingers without betraying my cool exterior? Which is very funny.
That little guy, you know?
He's always cracking jokes.
Little quippy Mulder.
Quip machine.
Quip machine. The quip machine, as I call him. So, you know, they talk about genetic mutations and hibernation and what could possibly be causing a serial killer that comes back every 30 years.
Been reading the X-Men. Yeah, comics, exactly. I assume.
I would assume. And you know what? I suspect he might be right.
Yep.
If I had to guess.
Yes.
So they, you know, they leave. They talk about how they need to do a stakeout of this place because he'll probably come back. But, you know, there's nothing they can do now because he's not there. Mr. Squeeze is gone.
Yep.
But as they're leaving.
Uh-oh.
And here's where the necklace comes back.
Bum, bum, bum. The plot necklace.
The plot necklace, as we call it. Scully's plot necklace gets caught on something again.
Is it just like a wall or something?
Yeah, it's just snagged a little bit.
Okay.
Except it's Mr. Squeeze in the ceiling pulling it off her neck. And apparently she doesn't notice that it's gone.
Yeah, I guess.
Whatever. I don't know. I would also be so excited about getting out of there that I wouldn't pay much attention. But Mr. Squeeze steals her necklace, which is ominous because we have... Well, first of all, ominous because he's there and has been listening to them and is creeping on the ceiling. But also ominous because we've just learned that he takes trophies of his victims. What does that mean?
Is Scully in trouble?
I think Scully might be in trouble.
Oh, boy.
So they organize a stakeout using the other FBI boys.
Yes.
They also, again, call Mulder, after he explains the plan to them, they call him spooky, and then they just laugh at him as he leaves the car.
What is wrong with these people? Come on, at least. Yeah.
Whatever.
Unoriginal.
And so we see Mulder giving the information to the guys who are doing the stakeout, and then we cut back to, I think, Scully's office.
Yes.
And, who comes in?
I was gonna say our boy, but he's not our boy.
No.
He's a boy.
He's just a boy.
Ugh.
Tom.
A boy I don't want to associate with.
No.
But he kind of tells her that he's gone over her head and called off the stakeouts, which is not cool. And then she gets real mad at him, and then there is the best line reading of the whole episode, is she's like, oh my god, I'm so mad, and so she picks up her phone to call Mulder and tell him that the stakeouts have been called off. Mm-hmm. And then, I feel like I can't do it justice. Tom, very, very breathlessly, I would describe this, very excited.
Yeah. I want to call Mulder and tell him.
Let me give him the news.
Let me give him the news, Scully. I want to hear his disappointment. It's not okay.
It was very breathless and it made me uncomfortable.
I don't know. I didn't
like it.
As we've, I think, mentioned, I'm currently watching Succession. I'm behind, I know, of the zeitgeist, but I'm currently watching it. And I feel like there's also a weird psychosexual obsession, not, you know, that Tom has for Mulder that isn't entirely dissimilar from
Greg and Tom.
Tom. Oh my God. Tom. Tom and Tom.
Oh no.
Oh my God. That Tom has for Greg in Succession. And I'm seeing a pattern where maybe people named Tom are evil.
Damn.
I don't know.
Well.
Anyway, so, whatever, Tom's a creep, and I think he might be in love with Mulder, but he will never accept it.
No. But he's gonna be real weird about it.
And then it's really embarrassing, because he gets all excited about telling Mulder, and then he just gets his voice filled. Which I feel like is also a metaphor for their, I don't want to call it a relationship. Tom thinks about Mulder a lot. Mulder probably doesn't remember Tom's name.
No.
So.
No. But... Yeah, so it's very embarrassing, and then Scully's really mad about it, and she asks him, you know, is this what it takes to climb the ladder? And he says, yeah, all the way to the top. And then she says, well, then I can't wait until you fall off and land on your ass, asshole. Bum, 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 bum. So,
that was pretty good.
Yelling at people, you love to see it.
I do.
I love to see it.
I enjoyed it. I was like, I've wanted her to yell at this guy since their cafe lunch.
Yes.
When I saw his hair.
Yep.
not to judge.
Right when he saw his hair.
But yeah, so she we, I think now, cut back to her apartment, right?
Yeah, I think we did that a little bit out of...
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
So she's driving home. Mr. Squeeze is watching her from the shadows. Mm-hmm. Mulder, I think, comes to the apartment. Not Scully's apartment, but Toombs' apartment, and realizes that the stakeout's been called off because there's no one there anymore, and he kind of freaks out because, you know, that's probably not good.
No.
So I think he's like running inside and trying to figure out what's going on. So now we kind of get to a part where obviously there's dramatic action happening. So they're cutting between scenes quickly. But basically, you know, he's trying to figure out what's going on. He gets back in his car. He's, you know,
he's calling.
He's on the phone. He's calling.
He's worried.
And what's happening to Scully?
So she goes back to her apartment. Well, before we talk about the action, do we want to talk about her apartment?
Yeah.
You said you had thoughts.
I just thought it was really cute.
Yeah.
It was very vintage. Mm-hmm. It was also really big.
It was really big.
It was really big. I don't know what they make at the FBI. Yeah. And I don't know what rent is like in Baltimore. Where does she live?
I don't know. We didn't get a special little thing.
If she lives in Washington, D.C., my understanding is rent is quite expensive. So I'm a little shocked. But I also don't know what you make if you work at the FBI. But it was very cute. There was like a big old tub that looked very cozy in the bathroom.
Yes.
There was
a huge tub.
Cute little tiles. I don't know. It was delightful. At first, I thought when I was first watching it that it was Mulder's apartment, and I was completely shocked at the concept of his apartment
being
so cute.
Not.
It's not. Don't worry. It's Scully's.
His apartment is not cute. No. Don't worry.
Okay, thank God. I was concerned. I was worried.
No.
But yeah. Yeah, so it's very cute.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we're seeing it because shenanigans are about to ensue.
Bathroom crimes.
Bathroom crimes.
Is what I wrote down.
She's calling Mulder. She's leaving him a voicemail to kind of give him the, you know, the update on Tom being a dick. And she's talking about how they should file a complaint against him or whatever.
Yep.
She puts down her cordless phone, which I thought was very fancy that she had a cordless phone in 93. And she starts a bath because, you know, it's been a long day. She's had to deal with some real bullshit from men like that.
She's got to relax. She's got to put her hair up in a towel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Probably put some cucumbers right on her eyes.
Yeah. Drink some wine. Read a book. I don't know what she likes to do.
That feels like what she would probably like to do.
Something like that.
That sounds really nice. Wait, I want to do that now.
Well.
Anyway, so she's getting ready for that. She's, I think, putting maybe oil or bubble bath into the bath or something.
Something aromatic.
It's gonna be a good bath, so this is really disappointing.
She is getting ready.
Because she's getting ready for a luxurious evening when bile drips down from the ceiling right under her hands.
Gross.
And she's like, well, shoot.
That's what she says.
Well, shoot with my gun, because I'm going to shoot this asshole.
Whoa.
Because she runs and goes and gets her gun.
She gets her gun. She's running around the apartment. Action ensues. Toombs is in the vent. He tries to grab her. They tussle. He pins her to the ground and he's about to... He was just had his hand out straight. So he was just going to
like
jam it in there and take the liver, which is...
That's going to be his liver.
A little weird. I'm just saying, if I were an evil liver-eating monster... I'd have some style. I wouldn't just grab the liver.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was going to plan something. I guess we didn't get it. We didn't get a chance to see what he was going to do.
I was not impressed with his style. I'll just say that much.
It's true. You know, you think he would have had some practice considering he's been doing this for years.
You'd think.
And he's got years in between to plan it and improve.
This is so embarrassing.
He's such a loser.
Ugh.
Oh, I guess I kind of skipped over the part where why Mulder knows that Scully is going to be the next victim is because he's in Toombs' little nest and sees her necklace. That's one of the trophies.
Yes.
So anyway, so that's how Mulder knows what's going on. So Scully's getting attacked.
Yep.
Mulder breaks down the door.
He's rushing in.
I thought this was kind of fun since last episode.
Yeah.
He was the one obviously being victimized.
Yeah.
And now she is. It's a nice
one. They're one for one.
They're one for one. They're a good team. They're saving each other. Yeah. I'm so proud of my my team.
Sure.
Anyway, so he, you know, like, there's a scuffle. A scuffle ensues.
Yeah.
They end up getting Mr. Squeeze handcuffed to the tub.
Yep.
Not going to be a good bath tonight, I don't think.
No. I really thought, it's been a while since I've seen this episode, and I really thought I remembered him squeezing out of the cuffs.
Oh, yeah.
I just assumed that it didn't happen, so I guess I misremembered that.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. So they catch him. Good night's work. Let's go get some French fries.
I did have a little wonder in my brain muscle about whether this was the scene that I was traumatized by, because it was someone being attacked in a bathroom. But I don't think it would have been, because I assume it would have been...
I assumed it was like a public bathroom.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And I don't think they did reruns as much back in the 90s, so I'm assuming it was a live episode. So probably would have been in season like 6 or something. Anyway.
I mean, there's plenty of people getting attacked in bathrooms, yeah, so...
Exactly. I just wanted to address that for all the fans who are clamoring to know if this was the bathroom scene that traumatized me. I don't think it was.
Okay. So. Well, we'll keep it in mind.
Okay.
It's a possible. We'll put it down with a question mark. Mm-hmm. All right. So, they caught him, and then we skip, and he is locked up in some sort of a hospital...
I assume it was like, you know, like in hand, a criminal
sanatorium.
Insane. A sanatorium.
I don't know what they call it.
Whatever. I mean, something like that. Something like that. For bad, bad boys.
Yes. And he's being a real creep. He's got newspaper. He's ripping it up and licking it and just throwing it at a corner. He's getting ready to make another creepy little nest, which I don't know why the staff at this hospital are allowing him to do that.
Because they have to clean that up later.
Yeah. I assume they're not going to let him go all the way.
I don't know. That's also what I do with my newspaper, though.
I've noticed that, and I don't care for it.
Don't look behind that mattress. Oh. Don't look behind there. No. And don't mind if your necklaces go missing.
I'm not wearing one right now.
You were. Oh my God. You were, weren't you?
Oh, boy. Missing my plot necklace.
So, yeah. So, he's, you know, there's some implications that he might be back. He might be able to escape.
Maybe.
The little food tray hole in his door.
Yes, he's looking very creepily at the small hole that he could probably squeeze out of. And then, boom, executive producer Chris Carter, credits, fiend. So there we go. All right, so I guess we can move on. I think usually... I don't know how necessary it is, but I think when we get, like, new important characters, we can kind of talk about them. So, how are we feeling about our boy, Victor Eugene Toombs?
Well, hella, I thought he was a creep.
Yeah, he sure is.
Didn't like how he gazed at people with his evil little eyes.
He's very creepy.
From dark corners.
He's super creepy. I feel like we're not properly capturing how creepy he is. Creepy.
You know, he can squeeze, he can climb... He's
got gross little eyes.
He's got gross little eyes that stare unblinking at you from the darkness, and they're the last thing you see as you hear, feel, and smell his stinking bile breath on your neck before he claws your liver out of your body and you die.
Yep.
And I don't like him.
No.
So I suspect that he'll have some weird vendetta against Scully and Mulder, too.
Perhaps.
Probably mostly Scully. I bet he's going to be weirdly obsessed with her or something.
That's usually how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sure he's going to want her liver.
Doesn't everyone?
Well, I mean, it's true. Yeah. So, like, I get it, but I'm not happy about it.
No. Yeah, I feel like, of course, now I'm battle-hardened and, you know, nothing scares me now, but... It's not true.
What a badass.
That's not true. But I feel like when I was watching this way back in the day, he really freaked me out. He's creepy.
That's fair. If I had seen this when it was first on, I would have not been born yet.
Yeah.
But if I had been born, I would have been scared.
Yep.
Would have been scared.
So, you don't care for him, but that's that.
But I'm guessing we'll see him again.
Maybe. Kiss him. Maybe. I did also write down Tom, but I feel like we've properly discussed how we feel about him. So I think we can probably move on.
We've made it clear that he's a loser. Ugh, does he come back? Ugh, God damn it. I don't want to see Tom.
I don't know. Should I say?
No, it's I can assume.
He doesn't, actually.
Really?
He doesn't.
Yay!
I think.
Okay.
Unless I'm misremembering. I don't think he comes back.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
I think this is the only episode he's in.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So we don't have to deal with his smarmy nonsense.
I don't think Scully's going to be sending him Christmas cards anymore, is all I'm saying.
I don't think so. They're not going to be meeting for lunch anymore.
They're not going to be Facebook friends when Facebook gets invented.
No, they're not. Mm-mm. All right. So I guess we can move on then to some kind of behind the scenes fun facts.
Yeah,
some
tidbits. This drama with the directors.
Let's see. Well, I've got some things first, and then we'll get to the drama. So
keep
Morgan,
them waiting. Ready and waiting.
Sated.
Nope. Oh. Or unsated?
Unsated. They will be sated.
Sate our audience later.
Will.
Delayed satiation.
We gotta stop. I don't like it. So, Morgan and Wong, the writers of the episode, they came up with the idea for Tombs after they looked at a ventilation shaft outside their office building, and they were just wondering if somebody could fit into it. So that's kind of how they came up with the idea. I already mentioned that they picked the liver because it was the funniest organ, which is funny. And then, I guess, Chris Carter also suggested livers after eating foie gras on vacation.
Gross.
So, that's gross.
I mean, you know, whatever. Do what you gotta do.
Well, that's the evil one.
Yeah, where they, like, torture the animals or whatever.
The force feed them. That's the bad one.
Gross.
So, no, that's a no for me. No for foie gras.
I don't eat it.
No.
I also don't eat. Anyway, I don't eat.
No.
So.
So we can blame Chris Carter for that, I guess. They were also when they were kind of in the hiring phase. Oh boy, I wrote down his last name. Hutchison was his first name. Doug. There we go. Doug Hutchison, the guy who played Tombs. They were initially wary of hiring him because they thought he looked 12 years old, which he does. He does look 12
years
old.
But it's kind of more creepy, isn't it?
Yeah. But they were impressed with his, when he went into creepy attacking mode, they thought he was creepy, which he is, so they hired him anyway. And Hutchison did say that he was inspired by Anthony Hopkins' stillness in Silence of the Lambs.
Mm.
So... yep. Another kind of fun fact. So when they were filming the cold open with Tombs in the drain, they arrived too late to secure the area. So there were just people everywhere. So they drafted a nearby construction crew to guard the area, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah,
so fun. Just had some dudes guarding that street.
Don't you come here. There's
Get
a film
here.
Shoot.
That's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So now we're about to say to our audience,
yes.
It's time.
I need
time.
To be sated, too.
I don't have a lot of details because
I'm leaving.
But, well, so Longstreet, the original director that they had that they ended up replacing. So Wong, the writer of the episode, he stated that he didn't think that Longstreet had respect for the script. So he just like straight up didn't film certain scenes from the script.
Huh. That's different.
He just like skipped them because he didn't like them.
One way
so
to do
it. He's just like, nope, we're not doing this. So when they replaced him with Cadelman, I guess that's how you pronounce it. So they had to go back and film the scenes that the first guy just skipped.
It feels like, I mean, I don't know a ton about film production or anything and TV production. That feels like maybe he has a film director's perspective in a TV world where, like,
yeah.
TV directors don't have that much creative control, right? Like, obviously a film director could be like, the scene isn't working, I'm cutting it.
Yeah.
It's like their baby. But isn't the, like, showrunner kind of the person who gets to decide the
you
thing?
Think.
Or like, the writers. Individual episode directors get to decide in TV.
Also, like, TV is so, or, like, especially TV of this time, it's so, like, act-based that you can't really just, like, take scenes out because then the whole balance of the episode is off.
Yeah, the commercial breaks come at the wrong time.
Yeah, it just feels weird, so.
Weird.
Huh. I don't care for that guy. Doug Hutchison, the guy who played Tombs, said Longstreet's directing was, quote, ridiculous.
Oh my goodness.
So, I wanted to know more details.
Yeah, how bad is this guy? What has he been? Has he directed other stuff?
I couldn't find anything else.
Uh-oh. No. Maybe he got blackballed.
I don't know. And then David Duchovny also didn't care for his directing. He said, describing their different opinions, Duchovny noted that the director, quote, the director wanted me to be mad about this horrible serial killer. And I was like, no, this is an amazing discovery. Tombs is not morally culpable because he's genetically driven and I judge no one. So.
Yeah. That'd be weird if Mulder was like,
yeah,
what the? Oh, I'm so angry.
Punch I know. It's like. That's not Mulder.
No.
That's not our boy.
I've only known him for 3 episodes, and even I know.
Oh. So, it sounds like he was not very popular. So
weird.
They got rid of him.
That's fair.
All right. And then they, to hire for the chimney scene where he kind of stretches himself out, they hired a contortionist named Pepper to do that.
That's so cool. I just assumed it was some early CGI.
It was partly.
Okay.
Yes.
But they still had.
But they did get a contortionist. Okay. So
spooky.
Also, the best behind-the-scenes tidbit is Doug Hutchison was very attached to his character, and he did write a prequel to this episode entitled Dark He Was and Golden-Eyed. And he sent it to Chris Carter, but the script was returned unread for legal reasons.
Has he posted it on fanfiction.net?
Oh, probably, right?
I hope so. That's where it belongs.
I don't know.
He didn't know at the time that they can't read that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, also, probably didn't want to.
Yeah. He sounds like kind of a weird guy.
That's so strange. I can't do it. No wonder he was able to embody the character so mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, I don't know. He just seems like a weird dude, so.
Yeah, more power to him.
I guess. So, Dark He Was and Golden-Eyed. Beautiful.
Now I want to read it.
It's probably online somewhere, if you look hard enough. That's Somebody's uncovered it. All right, so that's kind of our behind-the-scenes tidbits. We'll kind of move on to, usually we do sort of the real-life basis for the episode of the week. This time there's not too much because they just kind of made this guy up, but Morgan and Wong did say that they based Tombs on Jack the Ripper and Richard Ramirez. I guess Jack the Ripper is pretty self-explanatory. Richard Ramirez, because apparently he did, like, climb in through people's bathroom windows and stuff.
Serial killer from the 70s?
I think so. 80s? The Night Stalker.
Yeah.
I believe.
Ugh.
Gross.
Real creep.
Real creep.
I did watch a special on Richard Ramirez when I was probably too young, as
all
weird preteen girls do. Yeah. And I got very freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, fair. That's fair.
Yeah. He had a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Wasn't great.
No. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. So, not too much real life basis here. So, next segment, who's that actor?
Da da da. Who's that actor?
So, we got three folks in this one. So, Donal Logue.
Maybe Donal. I don't know.
I don't know. Donal Logue, he played Tom.
Oh.
So, okay. You might know him. I know him. He was on Gotham. He's, like, a main character on Gotham, which is a very silly show, but whatever. He's kind of fun on Gotham, and he was also on Sons of Anarchy, and he was also on Life for all those Damian Lewis heads out there.
Hey, Mom. I have seen Life, but I didn't remember him. Yeah. But as discussed earlier, I did think that one character from the show was another character from the exact same episode that I saw twice.
Yeah.
And still didn't realize that they weren't the same character, so.
Yeah.
Can't be a surprise.
So, that's Donal Logue. You've probably seen him on things. And then Kevin McNulty, he played Tom Colton's boss, who was only in a couple scenes. But he's apparently on every show ever made. I was looking at his IMDb. He's been in pretty much every show ever made. Okay. But specifically, he was in the show Supernatural. He was the revival preacher in a season one episode called Faith, which is one of the best episodes of the whole show.
I forgot about that show.
Yeah, remember the revival preacher, and he was blind and he healed people? Remember that one?
Wow, I remember when that show was good.
Oof.
Decades ago.
Yes.
But
yeah, so that was him.
I'm a sucker for any revival preacher.
I know.
Like real life, but you know.
Yeah. In fiction.
Cinema.
Sure. It's very cinematic. So, he's our first link in the X-Files Supernatural cinematic universe. There is quite a bit of crossover as well.
Yeah. Is there a straight line between Supernatural and Breaking Bad? Are they the same show?
I mean, there's. I think X-Files is it's the linchpin between the two.
If they were in a throuple, X-Files would be kind of the vortex. I don't know what the word is.
Yeah,
it would be
a triad.
It would not be a closed triangle.
Right.
But it'd be a triad.
Yeah.
With X-Files as the center.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I apologize. I probably got the terminology wrong.
No, that seems right.
But I would not say that Breaking Bad and Supernatural are dating each other.
No. No. Although, these are three of my favorite shows, so...
Well, there's something there, then, huh?
There's something there.
There's something. We needed more aliens in Breaking Bad. I mean, it was in New Mexico.
Come on. They could have gone to Roswell.
What if there's just one episode where it was just revealed that aliens were real, but they didn't have time to deal with it? Like, it was in Ozymandias. And they were like, we don't have time to deal with this right now.
Or there was, like, a standalone episode, like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead type thing with Badger and Skinny Pete, where they just discover that aliens are real.
Oh my god. They'd be so into it, too. But everyone else is so busy.
They can't deal with it.
Badger's got his Star Trek fan fiction. He'd be into it.
It'd be fun.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, catch me writing on my little laptop about
that
story.
Write that spec script.
I'm writing that spec script. Well, all right. I mean, Better Call Saul's going to be done in a year, right?
Yeah, so.
He's got time.
Yeah.
Vince, call me.
Call me.
Call me, Vince.
All right. So that's Kevin McNulty, and then the last one is Doug Hutchison, who played Toombs, and he was apparently on Lost in a recurring role that I don't remember, but he also played Percy in The Green Mile. If anyone's seen The Green Mile, he's, like, the horrible guard.
Oh.
The one that, like, steps on the mouse.
Oh, yeah. Is he the one that, like, doesn't put water on the sponge?
Yes. Okay. He's, like, the bad...
Okay.
The evil dude.
I don't remember him, but I remember his actions. And isn't that the way evil works?
I guess.
I don't know.
I guess. I don't know.
It was deep.
Okay.
It was deep.
But...
Don't worry about it.
That's him. So, always creepy.
Always creepy.
All right.
Next up, it's time for my favorite segment, Blazer Watch.
Burr, burr, burr.
Let's talk about fashion.
Sure.
There were so many blazers in this episode.
Okay.
And I will say, I was very into Scully's fashion this episode. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of, like, white button-ups that were buttoned all the way up, like Boyd Crowder.
With
a big old blazer on top of that. And, like, kind of high-waisted pants.
Yep.
I was like, I would wear the heck out of these outfits right now. Oh, yeah, when she was, like, getting ready for the bath, and she was, like, wearing a buttoned-up white shirt with, like, red pants. That was a great look.
Yeah.
She had, like, a green blazer at one point. She had a gray blazer. I think she had a red blazer at one point.
Yeah.
She was just blazering it up.
Yeah.
So.
I like it. I think the thing that jumped out at me, I liked Mulder's cute little investigation glasses. Yeah. When they were doing the microfiche montage, he had his little 90s glasses that he put on. Those were kind of cute.
Yeah. Well, he had to show that he was getting really into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the woman that was doing the lie detector, she had this crazy shirt on. It kind of looked like the kind of shirts that nurses in children's hospitals wear, with, like, really bold kind of crazy patterns.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like to me.
Well, she was working with children in this episode, so that's fitting.
That's true. Yeah. So... What do you reckon? Who's the winner here?
I mean, like I said, I was really feeling Scully's outfits. These episodes. It's actually sort of, you know, it's like how Toombs comes back every 30 years. Mm-hmm. They say fashion also comes back every 30 years.
Sure.
And, you know, 2023, we're coming right at the time when, like, 90s fashion is set to come back.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I guess it's predictable that I would be into it. But, yeah, I was like, I would wear these outfits to the office today.
Makes sense. Well, I have, if I may, I'd like to go a little bit against the grain here, and my personal prize, instead of giving it to clothes, I'd like to give it to the Beetlejuice room.
I mean, that's fair, yeah.
Because it's not fashion, it's not clothes fashion, but it's decor fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to give it to the Beetlejuice room.
I would like to see what that guy wears when he's not going into the office, because, you know, obviously he was wearing, like, boring man suits.
But if Toombs had given him a little time to undress and relax,
he would have slipped into something a little more weird.
Yeah.
And I would like to see that.
I love him.
I love him, too.
New favorite character. Yeah. Doesn't have a name, but they probably
said it. He was the victim in the line when Scully says she's on the victim side.
Sure.
So.
All right. Big V.
Big V. Big V in the house.
Yep. Okay, so that's Blazer Watch, and then we'll move on to the next best part of the episode, Will They, Won't They Watch. So this is kind of where we discuss Mulder and Scully's burgeoning relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of discuss how close they are to smooching, so we kind of use, like, a doomsday clock sort of metaphor. So 10 minutes would be 10 minutes to, what are we calling, 10 minutes to midnight?
Yeah.
10 minutes to midnight would be totally platonic. Nowhere near smooching. 0 minutes is actively smooching. And I did think about it, so Usually we have an example from this episode. So in this episode, I would say a 10 minutes to midnight would be Tom calling Scully Dana. Because I didn't care for it.
Not romantic.
It was actively repellent. But I would say a 0 minutes to midnight would be Tom giving Mulder the news.
Oh, yeah.
He was feeling it.
That was sensual. Know?
That was a zero.
Yeah.
He was breathless. He was ready.
I feel that. Yeah. All right. So where do you think Scully and Mulder fall on that scale in this episode?
This was a pretty chill episode. I don't know. I mean, Mulder did save Scully from death. So they're equal. They're 1-to-1. I guess. What else happened? We had...
Grabs the necklace. Is an intimate gesture, but I don't know, stood out as a weird gesture.
It was clearly
just plot-based,
yeah,
rather than being like a
sure
actual indication of how close they are or anything, because they're not that close.
Yeah.
I don't know. If a coworker tried to adjust my necklace, I would call HR.
So, yeah, I don't know. This is a pretty chill episode. I give it a 7.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I was going to say 7. It's, you know, yeah, they're defending each other, and, you know, Scully is sort of, I guess, actively choosing Mulder in ways, but it at no point really feels romantic to me in this episode.
I mean, they're close, but...
They're working together.
Yeah.
They're trusting each other, but they're not smooching each other.
They're not telling each other in the news over the phone.
No, exactly, yeah. At no point was either of them that passionate as Tom was for Mulder.
He was feeling passion in this episode.
He's the only one who felt passion in this episode. So I'd say 7.
All right.
But we'll get there. One day, they will smooch.
Maybe they won't.
I actually, to be fair, do not know that they do.
Oh, you don't?
Okay. No, so I have no idea.
I've been
assuming they do, but I don't know. They probably, like, smooch for, like, an investigation or something, where they have to, like, pretend to be married or something dumb. It's probably, like, the first time they smooch. Whatever, it's fine. We'll see.
I blank-faced. Yes. I won't tell you.
I will not be getting any indications from you, but that's my guess that it'll be something dumb like that.
All right,
so that's Will They, Won't They watch.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Carol.
So, last episode we called this Patterns Watch, which is not a very good name.
No.
So this is just kind of, like, not big plot-relevant threads in the episode, but just like little things that pop up here and there. So last episode is Patterns Watch, not a great title, so I'd like to suggest Carol from HR Watch. I assume you've seen that clip from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Nope.
Well, you've seen the picture of Charlie Day with the red string all over where he's freaked out and he's got the hair. And
yes,
you've seen that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, not now, but you have to watch that scene.
Okay. Is Carol from HR involved?
Carol from HR is involved.
Okay.
He has a whole conspiracy theory about Carol from HR.
Okay.
And he has a board with red string going all over the place, and he's obsessed with Carol from HR, and he's finding all these patterns where they don't exist.
All right.
So I'd like to suggest that as our title.
I'm into it. I love it. All right. Carol from HR.
So, yeah, this one... There wasn't too much this episode that I noticed. They name-dropped Spooky Mulder as his nickname.
A lot.
Quite
like
a bit.
Children on the playground.
Yeah. But, I don't know. That was all I noticed. I don't know if you noticed anything.
I don't know. Other than, kind of, the balancing act of one of the two being in distress and being saved by the other.
Yeah.
Which I assume will fluctuate throughout the show, because they're both in a dangerous line of work.
It's true.
And they gotta save each other so we can have emotional drama.
Yep.
So.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. So, move on. I guess Amanda's predictions. I guess you already did a little bit.
I've already kind of sneaked those in about tombs and about smooches, the two most important things. So, I don't think I have any other specific ones to draw on. I just, peppered them around like a little seasoning.
Ooh.
In the episode.
Okay. Like seasoning you might put on a liver?
Yes.
Ooh.
Absolutely. What do you season a liver with?
Cumin?
You can season anything
with
cumin. I love cumin. Cumin is my favorite spice.
Some garlic salt, some rosemary.
What?
I don't know.
What to season liver with?
Go to a deli and ask them.
Absolute best liver and onions, allrecipes.com.
Okay.
All right. It just says salt and pepper to taste.
That's ridiculous.
I can't handle white people recipes on allrecipes.com where they say make an entire 6 gallons of soup and put in a teaspoon of salt and that's it.
That's insane.
Are people living like this?
I guess.
That's horrifying. He heard it here first, folks. Buy a lot of spices, not just salt and pepper.
No.
And don't even get out your 1/4 teaspoon.
Because no, you just have nonsense. To feel it. You have to feel it from the heart.
You don't measure spices, you psychopath. You just put it in and taste it. Anyway. So that's a PSA.
Okay.
Put cumin, put paprika. What are other ones? Garam masala.
Basil. Cayenne, oregano.
Rosemary.
Onion powder.
Put those all in.
Yeah.
Put a lot of it in.
All of it.
Put all of it.
Everything in your spice cabinet.
You get your onions going in the oil. You season the onions because they really suck up the flavor pretty well. And then you add other stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway. Hit me up. I'll put this on Instagram. Okay. I'll put recipes.
Sure.
So I didn't really have any more predictions. But moving into our next segment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the nice little button on the end of our show. What was your favorite scene or moment from this episode?
I guess just, Toombs is very spooky. Not one particular moment, but he's a creepy little villain. He's a creepy little weirdo. Don't care for him. Or I do care for him by not caring for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I did already mention it, but my favorite line is when he has the gunk all over his fingers and the thing about the cool exterior. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
So that's my favorite moment.
I liked how Mulder reacted to people teasing him and judging him. I just liked his response to it, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sardonically tease them back, and then they don't know what to do at that point because all they know how to do is bully. All people, all FBI agents know is bully Mulder,
eat hot chip,
cancel stakeouts, eat hot chip, and lie. Yeah. And that's it.
That's it.
And I'm sick of it. So I liked how he responded.
Yeah.
I like him. Yeah. I like these characters.
Well, that's good. You got a whole show of them.
It's true. So as a whole, rating the whole episode, which we do on a scale of 1 to 5, what would you say?
I'm stuck between a 3 and a 3.5. It was like a solid episode. I guess I'll give it a 3.
Okay.
It was a good solid episode.
Nice. I give it a 3.5 because it was spooky.
It was.
And I got scared.
It was spooky. Not unlike Mulder.
It was spooky. It was as spooky as Mulder. It was spookier.
Spookier.
Frankly.
Yeah.
Alright, so 3.5.
Okay.
And 3.
Alright.
Turns out to 3.25.
There you go.
Think about it.
All right, so sounds good. So next week, we'll be moving on. We'll be talking about season 1, episode 4, Conduit. So this is not officially a mythology episode, but we do get some little nuggets of backstory.
Chicken nuggets.
Some chicken nuggets of backstory.
Yum.
We'll get a bit of an overarching plot.
All right. I'm into that. So if you want to reach out to us, you can send us an email at scullynationpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us on both Twitter and Instagram at scullynationpod. Our theme song is by Groove Masta Putz. That's GROOVE space MASTA space PUTZ. And you can find their music on Bandcamp.
All right. So that'll do us for this week.
I've been Amanda.
And I've been Ella. And remember, trust no one except for us.